Hi, everyone. I'm Laura Grundler.
And I'm Matt Grundler. And today on K-12 Art Chat, the podcast, we'll be chatting with Jarrett Rososka about illustrating life, the power of the art. All right. So Laura and I just had
moment of, oh my gosh, this is the person that our son was in love with for many years and didn't even realize it. Our friends at Davis connected us to this amazing illustrator, artist, educator.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. For this chat. And we had our own aha moment just now, but I'm really excited to have Jarrett, and I will, as our listeners know, I'll mess up the last name, so I'm going to let my husband say it.
Rososka. Jarrett Rososka. So Jarrett, we are super excited to have you here with us, and we just want to just kind of let our listeners kind of know a little bit more about you and kind of your story and how you got to where you are now.
Thanks so much. Well, thanks for having me, Matt and Laura. Appreciate it.
So Jarrett, just I've done a little digging into your work, and your books are beautiful, but your story is really beautiful. Can you tell us a little bit about your art journey and how you came into, you know, going the path of being an illustrator and a teacher and all the things that kind of had spread and taken tendrils from there?
Yeah. So, I mean, what I'm doing now professionally is just such a, you could draw a direct line to what I was doing as a kid. I mean, I was a kid who was obsessed with telling stories with pictures, and I would come home after school and I would grab paper and I would grab my art supplies and I would sit at the dining room table or on the living room floor, and I would make my own books. I would make my own comics. And when I was in the sixth grade at Worcester Public Schools, the public funding just completely slashed the arts programs. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather saw that as a real problem. And I was raised by my maternal grandparents because of my birth mother's opioid use disorder and the complete absence of my father. And so, you know, when I had art completely taken away from me in school, my grandfather saw that as a real problem because he knew that was my life raft. He mm-hmm. knew that art was like the only thing I attached myself to. And I didn't play sports, but art was my thing. And so he started sending me to classes at the Worcester Art Museum. And, you know, those are some of my happiest days from childhood and adolescence, was getting to go to the Worcester Art Museum and take classes on cartooning or animation, or, you know, as I got older, life drawing courses and, you know, courses that would get your portfolio ready. You know, those art classes, really, that was my island of misfit toys. You know, I get to be with all of the other kid artists from other schools across the city. And so, you know, I was lucky enough that I graduated high school knowing I wanted to be a professional artist, but then also knowing what kind of professional artist I wanted to be. I wanted to write and illustrate books for kids. And so I entered art school knowing exactly what I wanted to do. I was tailored all of my courses in the illustration department to that effect. And then was published after college. And I mean, the only thing that gave me pause to slow down was the COVID pandemic.
But I think we all did.
yeah, up until March 2020, you know, I was just constantly going. I mean, I began submitting my work to publishers when I was still an undergraduate, and so I had 2 years of rejections, but that first contract did come 6 months after graduating college. And I would just, you know, I was putting out a book or two per year ever since then. I have 46 books out now.
Wow.
That is a pace. Like, our viewers are not looking at you, but I'm seeing a young man and I'm thinking, holy moly, that is just a phenomenal creative, I don't even know what you would call that. It's called
a trauma response.
Well, we all have some overachieving aspects, and yeah, I get that.
It's called a desperate need for attention and love.
yeah, gotcha.
Well, I mean, you brought up a really good point. Early on for you, you said that, you had the, I guess, the negative side of the fact that the arts were kind of cut from you.
Yes.
And the whole area. And so, but I mean, how big of an impact or a role did the art room play, or that idea of creativity play for you? And do you happen to remember the name of the teacher you had?
So Miss Beattie was my teacher in elementary school, and her art studio was in the attic of Gates Lane School. Gates Lane School at the time was a building that was built in the late 1800s. And, the classic New England old wood fixtures and everything. And she was just the best, and she was the kindest. And I always look forward to getting into her classroom. And the earliest lesson that I can recall any art teacher giving me was, I was in fourth grade. And I have this picture. I can send it to you guys. But it was fourth grade, and I was trying to paint a picture of Snoopy, and I spilt some paint in the background, and I was really upset, and I was ready to throw the piece away, because I was just so upset, by this mistake. And she encouraged me to not look at it as a mistake, but an opportunity to make something different. And so then I started to disguise that paint in the background. I took other colors and made these abstractions. And she selected it to be in a student art show at the Worcester Art Museum. And so this
Oh.
is before I started taking classes there. And that was probably my first time walking into the Worcester Art Museum. And I can still remember seeing my work on the wall there, and I can remember how that made me feel. I also remember once we were out to eat, and Mrs. Beattie was at the next table over, and she politely said hi, but then she got up and she put her back towards me, and I felt so betrayed. And my grandfather
Oh.
said, "She just doesn't want you to see her drinking."
Yes,
And
teachers are
fair,
human.
fair,
They are
yeah,
real
fair.
people.
So we're, it was a very loving act that she's like, "I don't want my student to see me throwing him back."
I love it. The Snoopy thing made me wonder, you said you always knew that children's books were your pathway, the illustration of children's books. I think of illustration, and it's so much more broad than storybooks. You could have gone into comics, or you could have gone into, even magazines need illustrations, and different pathways for illustration.
Yeah.
Why children's books?
Oh, and it was another art teacher. So, and growing up, I was thinking just that, like, will I grow up to work for Marvel or DC? Will I grow up to work for Disney? And I remember at one point I get to the epiphany, maybe around fifth grade, of, I don't want to grow up and work for Disney. I want to grow up and like be a Disney. Like, I want to grow up and create my own world. And Mr. Richard Shillelagh was my high school art teacher, and such a kind and gentle soul. And he would bring in specific pieces of artwork that he thought would be right for each specific student of his. And so when I was a senior in high school, beginning of my senior year of high school, he brought in two picture books to share with me, The Salamander Room and The Garden of Abdul Ghazi by Chris Van Allsburg. These two books, which I don't have them right here. I tend to keep the influential books right by my Zoom space. And I remember being so taken by the beauty of the illustrations of these two picture books, but also with the permanence that a picture book could have on a shelf. At the time I was reading the comic strips in the newspaper, I was reading the monthly Marvel or DC comics from the comic book shop, which, while not disposable, didn't feel as permanent, right? I mean, I'm thinking to the picture books I had on my shelf at home. You think, oh wow, like that's a book that I've had on my bookshelf my whole life, at 17 years old, my whole life, right? And at the time, I was also volunteering. I started volunteering at a camp for children with cancer, which had a huge emotional impact on me. And so it was Mr. Shillelagh who brought in two books from his own personal collection that sort of sent me, down the path. And that's what really good teachers do, right? They, you know, that student is heading down a path, and they place little nudges on the kid's shoulder to help guide them and send them in a direction that's going to work out for the kid.
Yes.
Well, I'm thinking about like all these little, this is so true. Like as a teacher, we try to just plant little seeds, like, and
Yes.
hopefully they take hold, or they spark an idea, or they move somebody forward in a certain direction, and to give those kids. But it sounds like your grandparents might have had a lot of inspiration in your life as well. I've read some things about your grandparents being very outspoken and being very influential. And I saw that you dedicated something in the Worcester Art Museum to them as well. And can you just tell us a little bit more about that?
So, my grandparents grew up during the Great Depression, and growing up in the 80s and 90s, I would always be regaled with what life was like and the difficulty of life during the Great Depression. And there was like then there was a family business, with the Krasoskas, and my grandfather made clear in my early teens that while I would be taking summer work there, he had no expectations for me to have to take over the business someday.
That's
And
nice.
that was a huge relief. It was a huge weight taken off my young shoulders, because I thought that maybe that's what would be have been expected of me. And while they sent me to classes at the Worcester Art Museum, once I got older and things were looking more serious, that's when like the fear kicked in of and as a parent, I get it. Like, oh, how is this kid going to support himself? And when you're a grandparent raising a grandchild, you have that fear any parent has is how is this kid going to support themselves some days? But there's this added anxiety of, I will not be alive to see this kid well into their adulthood. I was lucky enough that I had my grandparents lived very long lives. They both lived to 80, but I lost them at 29 and 31, 32 or so. And so, well, that was, a great run to have a grandparent, at 46. I mean, there are times where I'd love to be able to just pick up the phone and call them to talk about life being a parent myself. And so there was this nervousness of maybe this kid can't support himself. My grandfather always had a more nuanced way to share his thoughts and fears. My grandmother was very blunt. And once when I told her, this art, like she gave some pretty harsh criticism to a piece of artwork that I'd made, and I said, Grandma, this is my dream. This art thing is my dream. And she said, yeah, that's what it is. It's a dream. And that really hurt, right? That really hurt. But my grandmother's that was. It might be hard to see it, but there's a lot of love in that because she didn't understand or know how to operate any other way but to be blunt and kind of mean. On her deathbed, she said, I could be mean sometimes, and I said, no, Grandma, but at the same time, her eldest daughter-in-law was on the other side of her, and the eldest daughter-in-law said, So when my grandparents died, when they both died, reflecting on just the fact that I'm alive is a testament to the hard work, like that I never got lost in any system, that I didn't befall the same kind of addictions my mother did, that I stayed on the straight and narrow, that they sent me to school clean and put together and kept me on the straight and narrow and corrected my behavior when my behavior needed correcting. But they also when the fact that they sent me to those classes, I mean, they were brave enough to send me to college to study art, but to send me to those classes had an even bigger impact on my life, the classes at the Worcester Art Museum. So I have a scholarship in their name for kids in Worcester who's maybe being raised by a grandparent or maybe has a parent dealing with addiction. And they might, you know, their caretakers just might not be able to afford the tuition in a way my grandfather was able to.
Wow. I started thinking about your book, Hey Kiddo, and just listening to your stories and the way that art impacts everyone's lives, in the different ways that they impact your lives. And that ability to be able to create art in a way to reflect and to, kind of just take a look at yourself personally and kind of where you are in process. A lot of art making is process. And I would just love to hear, and I know our listeners would probably just love to hear a little bit more about the book, Hey Kiddo, and we're hearing these wonderful stories of the ways that shaped your life. And just want to just know a little bit more about your book, Hey Kiddo.
Hey Kiddo is a graphic memoir that's written for young adults. So it's a book that's, the majority of my books are for elementary age students, but Hey Kiddo is middle school and up. And it's a no holds barred look at what it's like growing up with a mother who has opioid use disorder, with two grandparents who were undiagnosed alcoholics, with a father who was absent, like what it's like to grow up in that kind of house, and then growing up as an artist. And so it shares family stories. It shares stories about these different moments of teachers, giving me that little nudge here and there, like Mrs. Casey, who hired me to be the cartoonist for the high school newspaper. That came at a pivotal time in my life. And so it tracks my life from birth to the moment I graduated from high school, and set in Worcester, Massachusetts. So if you're familiar with the city of Worcester, you'll recognize all of the landmarks like Coney Island Hot Dog. And and it was published initially first published in 2018. And the thing about memoir is that, we all have so many different stories. Like, if we were to write just one book about our whole life, like that would be really boring because, your life has so many side quests going on as well. So there's a second book called Sunshine, and that's about my time working at the camp for kids with cancer, and that it sort of it ties into Hey Kiddo. And I wrote that book in response to just meeting so many young people across the country who also dealt with addictions. Every school I'd visit, I would meet a young person that was touched by addiction from an adult in their life. And it wouldn't matter if I was in a red state or blue state or suburban, urban, rural neighborhood, or if I was in a private school or a school that was 100% free and reduced lunch. That's a plague that has touched everyone.
Wow.
Curious how students respond to the book, because there are some heavy issues in it, and I think a lot of kids, I mean, Matt and I have both taught in a lot of different situations, and we've both taught kids dealing with parents that were going through difficult illnesses, difficult all kinds of things, loss of jobs, anything you can
Yeah,
think of.
anything.
And I'm curious what the response is when they read the book, how they feel about it. And then I'm curious about how you felt writing it, because I think that you really put yourself out there. And I'm just sitting here thinking, I don't know that I could write and draw my life story.
The most powerful thing a reader said to me, it was a reader who was in a similar situation, and that reader said, "I didn't know I was allowed to be angry." And that is really powerful. I've met other readers who, reading Hey Kiddo gave them more compassion for the adult in their lives that was dealing with addictions. And I've heard from people who've never seen their experience reflected in a book. And I've heard from readers who now better understand what their peers are going through. or that the book has given them deeper perspective on their own lives because they have nothing like that happening at home. And it is very, it's a very emotionally fraught experience to write about your life. And whether you're writing about huge trauma or small moments that are frustrating, you need to make sure that you're taking good care of your mental health. So, you know, I made sure at the when I was writing the book that I was with a therapist that was working for me. Writing it is one thing, but illustrating it is much more
That's
emotionally difficult
yeah, that's what
because
I was thinking.
when you're
Yeah.
writing it, it's just, you know, words are just abstracted marks on a page. But when you're drawing it, you're making eye contact with these people again. You're face to face and you're in the rooms again. And that's one emotion that's difficult. But then the other emotion that's difficult is then when you finish the book, you're sad because you have to say goodbye to them again. And so when I was finishing my second memoir, as I was getting close to the end page of the last few pages, I had the sinking feeling of, oh, I know what to expect now because I was so blindsided with the first book. Usually when you finish a book, you just have so much relief because you've been stressed about having an art deadline for several months and you've been having anxiety about seeing your editor's name come up in your inbox and yeah, but it's different. It is a very challenging experience.
I'm curious also a little bit more about Sunshine because I was a middle school assistant principal for a long time, and I actually during that time I had two kiddos go through some serious cancer treatment. Two kiddos, not that's what we just call them, students. And it's different, you know. Matt and I have also lost parents to cancer, but it's different when you see an 11-year-old, you know, that's fighting for their life. And I'm curious about that impact on your life, working with kids going through cancer treatments and, you know, seeing them come out the other side, seeing them be no evidence of disease, you know, and getting the healthy bill, but also there's also the sadness for those kids that don't come out with that diagnosis.
So, what I aim to get across in the book is what I experience in life is that when you volunteer, when you give of yourself to others, you end up getting more out of it than like, and the more you put into something, the more you get back from that. And for me at the time, it helped me have a bit of a mind shift to understand that, oh, there are so many different kinds of difficult childhoods. It connected me, I learned how to have to work together with people you don't know because, you're not necessarily friends with all of these people that you're going to be volunteering with. And, but it, you know, my work at camp also helped me understand kids. You know, when I was graduating college, my grandfather was more or less begging me to go get a master's degree. And I have a BFA in illustration. And while there are programs that have a master's in illustration now, there wasn't then. And so he really wanted me to get a master's in graphic design, I think, because he knew this internet thing was going to be a big deal and he wanted me to have job security. And I said, no, my summers working at this camp, that's my master's degree. That's helping me really get to know kids
And
and
it
how they
helps to put a
operate.
lot in perspective too. So,
Yeah, sure does.
at the very beginning of our conversation, you brought up a large, crazy number of books. And I'm just curious if there were any of those particular projects that kind of stumped you a little bit more than others.
Oh, the memoir by far. I mean, I started, so I received my first book contract. It was December 99, January 2000. And then, you know, it was that year 2000 where I thought, well, maybe I'll write a book about growing up. And I just wasn't emotionally ready for it. And it took me many years of being emotionally ready. And also I'm grateful because it took, also over those several years, I worked on my storytelling skills and through all of these other picture books and graphic novels. So, and like I mentioned, Hey Kiddo was published in 2018. So that book was 18 years from initial concept to when the book was finished, More time had passed than the character of Jarrett aged in the book.
Well, I was just sitting here thinking too. I was doing a little math when you were talking because you're speaking to some people that are the exact same age of you as you, and I thought, oh wait, that means he's written 2 books a year for the past 23-ish years.
Yeah,
Yeah.
just about. There are just 2 years in which I didn't have a new book published. And actually this calendar year, I don't know that a book will be published. And that comes to, I'm still getting the train back on the track after all the pandemic disruptions of getting my book deadlines back on track. And part of that is, just trying to figure out, like, how do I juggle all of this? Kids were home, the mental weight of it all, the financial stress of it all. But 4 years after the initial shutdown, and I'm like, okay, things are back in order. Only took me 4 years.
Well, yeah, I think you're not the only one. You know, I think thinking about Matt's question too, you know, a lot of your work is things that you've used your imagination, that you have used life experiences that you get to have carte blanche with. Then, you know, Matt and I were saying at the beginning of the podcast, our son, we didn't put it together until just now, but when he was probably fourth, fifth, sixth grade, he was obsessed with the Jedi Academy. And I'm guessing maybe
Obsessed.
you did obsessed is really the true word. It's the right word. Those are some well-worn books in our house. But just, you know, thinking about the difference between, and I think our teachers would like to hear because kids are always asking, you know, they think that they can always just use their imagination and make it all their
All
own
the time.
all the time. And so when you give them like parameters or constraints, they don't really like it. But I'm guessing as an illustrator, when you're working for somebody that's not, you know, publishing your own content or that you're working in collaboration with someone, that there might be some constraints, you know, can you talk to that a little bit?
My answer kind of negates what you had said, but I firmly agree that as an artist, your creativity flourishes when there are constraints. Constraint breeds creativity. The Jedi Academy's books are probably some of the most personal books that I wrote.
Oh, really?
I initially was. I never thought I'd be like a Star Wars author because my work is sort of cartoony, and I had to just keep reminding myself, okay, they hired me to make a Jarrett J. Korzoska book, not a book like I wouldn't make. And so the Jedi Academy books are told with a mix of journal entries and found materials and comic book pages. And so the main character Victor is pretty much me. I mean, now that you know my life story, you should go back and reread them.
Yeah, well, and it's been a minute. He's 17 now, so yeah.
I mean, Victor is estranged from his father. He then later meets his father. He has to contend with the fact that his father went to the dark side. And so it really was like a big allegory, like what it's like to not know a parent, what it's like to grow up with a parent with addiction. Does that mean you're a bad person? Does that mean you're going to end up on the dark side? No, the only restrictions were I couldn't, while my books were not canon, I couldn't contradict anything that is canon in the world of Star Wars. So, for instance, in one book, in my early draft, I had a human piloting a pod racer. And the pod racers are, those iconic things you saw in episode one with the kid riding them. And what I they said, well, no, you can't have another human piloting a pod racer because that's what made Anakin Skywalker so special as a kid. He was the only human who could pilot a pod racer, which I didn't, So like there are fact checkers who
Oh,
work at
yeah.
Lucasfilm that make sure that it just can't contradict anything that's existed. And so no, I mean the restrictions in any in making any book is the trim size, so like how big the page is and the page count. And a picture book is 32 pages long. The trim size can vary. And the Jedi Academy books were, I believe, 176 pages long. And so, you know, the restraint comes in, you don't have an infinite amount of pages to tell the story.
I think that that is the constraint that I would
No,
use with
that's
teachers, like to you know, like I think, yeah.
giving the restraint, giving the constraints is going to help that.
Oh, 100%, 100%. I used to be a mentor at Art Allstate, and you know, where they would get juniors from all across the
Oh,
state of
yeah.
Massachusetts, and we would create an art installation. And you know, in my early times there, you know, we could get the kids could have whatever art supplies they wanted. And then at one point, the admin had this really wonderful idea of like, let's constrict this to like just three different materials. And the art was so much better. The group project, the group installation was significantly better than when the kids just students could have whatever art supplies they wanted. Yeah.
So, I mean, to kind of piggyback and continue our conversation, what kind of tips would you give to our teachers then that, that they can learn from all of that?
I mean, one book project of mine in which I was dealt with limitations was the Lunch Lady series. So when the Lunch Lady graphic novels were first published, they got picked up in the mid 2000s at a point where publishers just were not publishing graphic novels for kids. And the publisher didn't want to invest the money in printing the books in full color out of fear that because the production cost would be high, the retail cost would be high, and then no one would buy the book. It was an unproven format. So they said, we're going to print the books in just black, and then we'll find a signature color for an accent color. And we chose yellow based on that iconic dishwashing rubber glove that you would stereotypically see a lunch lady wear. And so I had to figure out how to use just black and yellow. And now that yellow is so closely tied in with that character and those books. And so one, limiting palette is so powerful. In fact, I can even remember in college, my breakthrough painting was when we could only use two colors. And because now I was focused on hues and values
Values, yeah.
instead of you know trying to mix up all these colors. And so restricting the palette. I mean, even just understanding that, you know, if you're making a picture book, it can't be longer than 32 pages. And those 32 pages has to also include one page is the title page, one page is the copyright page, one page is the dedication page. That is a restriction that is so powerful.
I had no idea
I
about
wasn't
that.
even thinking about that.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, so that only leaves you with like 28 pages.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cram that story in there.
Cram it in there. I had another thought on how it might tie into what I do. I don't know. I'll wake up at 3 in the morning and think about
Well, it'll come back, but you know,
it.
I was curious too. I mean, you mentioned that you've gone to lots of schools, and I'm also wondering what tips you would give teachers for connecting with kids that are coming from complicated family lives.
Oh, I mean, I guess if you give them a space to explore their emotions and in a sketchbook, those empty sketchbooks made a big difference for me. And I think, you know, also it's difficult to toe the line between, I mean, when you're dealing with teenage artists, how much to support them and just tell them they're doing a great job, but then in a way to toe the line because you don't want them to get egotistical because sometimes it's that there's only like there's the one kid who's the artist in the class. And
Yeah.
how to teach young artists that, you know, constructive feedback is not criticism that's negative. It's advice that's going to help you improve your artwork.
Feedback.
It's feedback.
Feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
Constructive.
yeah. I mean, because look, like there's no professional artist I know of that doesn't get feedback from an art director.
Jared, would you like to come have a one-on-one with our 13-year-old artist in
Yeah,
this
sure.
house? Really?
There was a rough little patch there when her
Oh.
parents are both art teachers, and so we were like, hey, this is a good start, and you need to, keep working at it. And then she would go storming off into her room because she was all mad that we didn't say it was
Oh my
amazing and
gosh.
wonderful. And
Well, here's the thing. If surgeons are not allowed to operate on their own family.
That's right.
And
That's
I've
right.
learned the hard way. I have artists in the house too, and a very similar story with my tween painter. I just didn't think that they were finished yet. I wasn't even trying to give feedback, and boy, did they.
Like, hey, what about the background?
Yeah.
Oh, you
Oh,
mean I have to
no.
do a background? Yes,
Yeah.
it needs a
Yeah.
background. So
Yeah.
we actually hired our pseudo grandmother, and
Yeah, we have an art grandmother.
she's an art grandmother, and she's a fiber artist, and so she started kind of we were telling her about the woes, and then she was kind of going in and giving some feedback, and she, of course, our daughter, took it in a much better way than
Of
her own
course, of
parents.
course.
So,
Yeah, of
and
course, of
I've learned
course.
just to keep my mouth shut.
Yep.
But she's now seeking us for feedback, which is great. So,
Right,
or
and
I
that's kind
say,
of how you have to do it, yeah.
what does your art teacher say? That's my typical line. Or what do you think? What do you think? Oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness. I as we wrap up our conversation, we love to just kind of end our conversation with, you just kind of leaving our listeners with just a little bit of advice, or any kind of other
Insights.
insights or wisdom that you want to share
Yeah,
with our
sure.
listeners that we haven't already talked about.
Yeah, so I mean I've when I teach young artists online too, and my and even when I see artwork at schools, right? So often when I'm going to schools, the young artists will show me their work, and I just always lead with you worked really hard on that, to praise the effort,
Effort.
not the raw talent that the kid might have been blessed with. Also, never try to, if you don't know what that's a drawing of, don't guess. Just
Yes,
tell me more
no,
about
that
your
is true.
picture. Tell me more about your picture. But the jobs that our kids will have someday haven't been invented, and that's always been the case. And AI or not, and in order for our kids to be successful in whatever they end up doing in life, they have to be creative problem solvers. And that's exactly what happens in the art classroom. You learn to become a creative problem solver. So, yeah.
In my other normal everyday job, I could see a role where you come do some advocacy for art
Yeah.
ed.
Yeah. Yeah,
I
no,
mean,
I mean that's why I'm grateful to have an online platform via social media that I can and with video more than ever, because video is a really powerful platform, because you're making eye contact with this person on the other side of the screen. They don't know you're there, but they're there. They're talking about. Yeah.
Oh man, Jarrett. Well, this has been a really wonderful conversation,
No,
and
it's been nice.
can't thank you enough.
Yeah.
So,
Well, Matt and Laura, thank you both. I appreciate you both. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for having this platform.
thank you. So at the sometimes I think we
you keep
record the
saying
beginning
this.
and the end,
You keep saying this,
like
but
just like I wish we could like not tell people we're recording and then we could just record the whole thing. But like, well, first of all, the whole conversation was amazing, and just what a human with a beautiful light
oh my gosh.
and is such a beautiful sharing spirit. But also at the end, there were like these crazy connections.
Like 7 degrees
Well,
separation kind of thing.
our producer grew up in that area of Massachusetts and was like,
Hey,
hey,
I have a
I
question.
have a question. I think you came to my school.
And he did.
And he did. And
He actually had a
his friend,
photograph. A
yeah.
photograph that he took of some kids that didn't have Cam in it, but Cam knew like half those people in the photo.
And hey, Cam, I know you don't want to be on the podcast, but we got those Star Wars questions in for you.
So just I can't wait to go read through his resources and all of his books and all the stuff. So
Well,
it's
I think too, like we didn't really get a chance to talk to him about this side of thing, but I think graphic novels are in a place. He did mention like early on with The Lunch Lady that it wasn't a tried and true, like
Oh.
people were afraid to publish those. Now we all know that graphic novels are literature, that they are, great resources for kids that are reluctant readers or just want to consume a lot, want to read, and it keeps them going and it's exciting and fun. And, they're not fluff,
Yeah.
and you can totally see that. I mean,
Well, especially
gosh.
with all the parallels that he was saying about the stories in the Jedi Academy were all basically his life.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying in general, graphic novels are true literature, and kids love them, and we should be utilizing them. So as teachers, I'm excited about the resources because I want to see what other things they can share with kids. And if you have a middle schooler to high schooler, that I definitely I've looked at Hey Kiddo before, but now I want to go back and check it out and just spend some more time with it. And just, thinking through everything he shared, there's just a lot of unique things that we can bring into our classroom. And I really appreciated him.
It was a good conversation.
All those resources that Jarrett shared, where can we find those?
They can be found on davisart.com on their website and under
If
free resources.
under free resources, and that's where you can find all episodes of K-12 Art Chat, as well as the resources. I just shared a page with somebody today. They were curious about car design. And I said, oh, we have a podcast about that. And I sent them the page, and they were like, what in the world? All these resources right here at my fingertips? And I said, yes, here it is. And they were like, wait, and there's all these other podcast episodes? And I said, yes. And I said, and if you don't want to go to the webpage and like you're in your car or something, you can also listen to them. Where else can you listen to them?
On all of the podcast platforms,
That's right.
Spotify, Apple, all the things,
Amazon,
Amazon, all the things.
whatever your heart desires.
Sure.
And if you'd like to help out the creativity department in K-12 Art Chat, we would love it if you would send us an email about your ideas, your thoughts, who you want us to have as on as guests. And you can reach us at thecreativitydept@gmail.com. And the other thing you can do to help us out is
To rate and review our episodes and share them and hit the like button and
and
all the stuff
subscribe, all
and
the
subscribe
things.
to them so
Yeah.
you'll never miss
An episode.
an episode.
Yep. So, as always, thank you for listening, and we wish you a creative week ahead.